Welcome back to the Amazing Gamers Podcast, a just for fun production about media that matters and why we love it so much. Your host, Nathan Lamb, is not an amazing gamer, but he sure knows a few people who are. This is our conversation for today. Welcome back to the Amazing Gamers Podcast. I'm your host, Nathan. I'm thrilled to be here today. We got some favorite things that we're going to discuss today with my guest, Kat, also known as Skeleton Kat from Blue Sky. I also refer to him as the number one Tokyo Mirage Sessions fan on Blue Sky.
I'm depending on the person, they'll either see that as a compliment or an insult. But then again, that's just kind of the game that Tokyo Mirage Sessions is.
Well, you know, as long as we're keeping it in the discourse, you know, it's like, it's a fun thing to talk about. And I think we all need fun things. So
that is true. That is true.
It's how I look at it. And it's funny, I'll tell everyone how this got started. I have a poster of Tokyo Mirage Sessions down in my gaming room because my son has a subscription to Nintendo Force magazine. They give you a poster every month. They had Tokyo Mirage Sessions as the cover story one month.
Ooh.
When it got ported to Switch. And they had a poster and I looked at it and I said, "Son, can I put this on the game room walls?" And he looked at me and he's like, "Go for it, Dad." So, I was looking at it one day and I was just like, man, I want to do a pod episode on Tokyo Mirage Sessions. And I put that post out there saying, anyone who wants to do a pod, let's talk Tokyo Mirage Sessions. And yeah, you will never guess who responded.
Me, the one and only.
Well, we've discussed it a few times and I think
I have some very interesting takes on it.
I can't wait to hear it.
Mm-hmm. And, I did replay a little bit of it, not the whole thing, but like the opening, like prologue slash first chapter, just like in preparation for it, just to like refamiliarize myself with its like systems a little bit. And the context of Tokyo Mirage Sessions is, it's a very interesting one because you kind of have to look at it both in terms of what it is versus what it was meant to be. Tokyo Mirage Sessions, the initial concept was a crossover of Shin Megami Tensei with Fire Emblem. And, you know, on one end of that crossover, you have a dark post-apocalyptic, a franchise about a dark post-apocalyptic world of gods and demons and religion and philosophy and mythology is just intersecting over it into like a rich world and cosmology. Whereas Fire Emblem, okay, I'm not exactly as acquainted with Fire Emblem as I am with SMT, but with Fire Emblem, it's like this medieval fantasy of, you know, dragons and warriors and mages and princes and princesses and knights and lancers and whatnot. And it's they're both very much JRPGs, emphasis on the J in how anime inspired they can be. And I mean this in a truly positive way. But they both evoke a much more like mature sort of tone in completely different ways. They both have a sort of maturity to them. They have like their silly moments here and there, Fire Emblem more so. I mean, you know how people talk about that series, they both have like this sort of like quote unquote dark maturity, if that makes sense. They're not like gritty, but they handle like much more, they handle topics and subject matter that you would probably like give to like an older teenager as opposed to like a younger one, you know, or like a young adult. You'd rather give it to somebody in like their older teens or in the, like 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, like that sort of age range, I think is what SMT and Fire Emblem target. Even though they both are very anime inspired, even though they both have their silly moments, I think overall that is what they both try and strive for. And you're crossing over these two series, and people were expecting, and naturally, when you have fans of these series, they come with big expectations. You need to consider the context at the time that when the crossover was announced, the most recent games that had come out were Shin Megami Tensei 4 for the 3DS and Fire Emblem Awakening also for the 3DS. And somebody can fact check me if I'm wrong on this one later. But if I remember correctly, both of those games were sort of, if they did not do well, they were going to be like the last games of their respective franchises. And so as a result, both of the games, from what I've spoken to with other Fire Emblem fans and from what I've played of Shin Megami Tensei, both of those games are kind of like a celebration and like a sort of almost new jumping on point approach for their respective series. So it's like it's a celebration without necessarily feeling too self-congratulatory, if that makes sense. So as a result, a lot of people, you know, they really liked those games. A lot of people's first jump into Fire Emblem is Awakening. A lot of people's first jump into SMT is SMT 4. When I started playing Persona in high school, I was like 15, and Joker got announced. I played P3, 4, and 5, and then I moved on to SMT. And even though SMT 4 wasn't the first Shin Megami Tensei game that I played, I would say that it was definitely the first one that I finished to completion. And I have a bit of an interesting conflicted relationship with it. I mean, I have a fair amount of positives about it, and I know why people like it, but I have a slightly opinion of the minority when it comes to SMT4, but that is not to detract from what SMT4 did for the series. And I think there's probably a lot of similar things to say about Fire Emblem Awakening. So when both of the series were announced to be getting a crossover, I think people had a lot of expectations. And then the announcement trailer hit. Yep. And people were not particularly happy. I mean, I know some people thought it was like an April Fool's joke because the announcement trailer released on April 1st. So people were like, nah, this is not real. When our crossover of our post-apocalyptic mythology series and our medieval fantasy series cannot be modern, contemporary, idol video game. And I think the sheer dissonance of what Tokyo Mirage Sessions is what turned a lot of people away from it in the first place. Would you agree?
I definitely hear it whenever I posted about our chat earlier today, and a guy that I'm mutuals with retweeted and said, because I made a meme recently of what I want to see from Atlas, and Tokyo Mirage Sessions 2 was on the list. And one of my mutuals retweeted and said, yes, Tokyo Mirage Sessions 2, but it must be the crossover that we were originally sold on. So yes, whenever it comes up, this comes up.
One more detail to add. Are you familiar with the Devil Survivor subseries in Mega 10, Nathan?
No, I don't think I am. No, I don't know that one yet. No.
So, you know how mainline SMT has a bunch of spin-offs? You have your Devil Summoner, you have your Persona, and you have all that. One of the most well-regarded subseries is Devil Survivor. And it's basically taking that formula that SMT is known for and applying it in a strategy RPG setting. So, you know, you're on a tactical grid. You have to move your units around. And the battle combat is like a much more concise version of like typical like mainline press turn or one more.
Yep.
But it's much more, it's based on a strategy grid. And the character development is similar to Persona in a way. Like the second game has social links, and both games have an emphasis on characters and character motivations and how that ties into their beliefs and philosophies. So as a result, Devil Survivor, especially the first game, and to a lesser extent the second game, but both the games are very well regarded amongst veterans of Mega 10. Myself included. So when people said, oh, we're going to be getting SMT, crossing over with the most popular Japanese tactical RPG franchise, people thought, oh, we'll be getting like a high quality game that's similar to Devil Survivor. And I think people had a bit of that expectation. And Tokyo Mirage Sessions is not that. And I think that's another big part of what let people down. I'm pretty sure the director of Devil Survivor 1 and 2 was even a staff member on Tokyo Mirage Sessions. I need to just double check that.
Oh my gosh. So there was reason to believe. So for those who haven't played it yet, this is how I would describe Tokyo Mirage Sessions. I would say it's a Shin Megami Tensei in the style of Persona, set in the Japanese entertainment industry.
Yes.
That's about how I would describe
That's a fairly rough approximation. That sounds about right. I just looked it up. The director of Devil Survivor 1 and 2 was the producer on Tokyo Mirage Sessions.
Oh, gotcha. So there were connections there.
There were connections there, and people had expectations, and I don't think those expectations were necessarily met. But now I want to turn the table around and try and re-examine what Tokyo Mirage Sessions is like on its own merit. And on its own, Tokyo Mirage Sessions is a very fun game, a very, how do I put this with an adjective that does not sound negative? It's a very fun game. It's a very safe game, I suppose. I wouldn't say safe, actually. I mean, the idea of doing this sort of crossover and making this sort of result is pretty bold. But I would say it's a very, the storyline is very typical of what you'd expect. Like, if you've seen, like, a fair amount of, like, anime with like high schoolers and whatnot, with some supernatural elements thrown in there, that have a bit of a power fantasy to them, you can kind of predict where Tokyo Mirage Sessions goes. But the main unique point in its story is the fact that Tokyo Mirage Sessions is set in the entertainment industry. And because it's set in the entertainment industry, it kind of explores topics that I don't think any magazine title really covers. But then people people would probably play devil's advocate with me and be like, well, sure, Tokyo Mirage Sessions is the first game that covers the idol industry in this franchise, but is this franchise one where you would need to cover that sort of thing given its identity? And that's a fair argument to make. The game, you also do need to consider that the Nintendo Switch had been out for a little while. So we'll fast forward a little bit. So Atlus was making Mega Ten games, including Persona Q. They were making it for the 3DS. There wasn't really anything on the Wii U at the time.
Yep.
And then we got Tokyo Mirage Sessions, and it was a bit of the reaction was very much a mess, irrespective of how the game's quality is, right? Then
expectations.
We fast forward to Shin Megami Tensei 5 is announced on the day the Switch is like revealed. When Nintendo is doing their big like presentation showcase, they're like, okay, these are all the games that are going to be coming out in the first year of the Switch. Mario Odyssey, Breath of the Wild, Splatoon 2, 1-2 Switch, all these games. And when they get to the third-party segment, one of the biggest highlights and expectations people had was Shin Megami Tensei 5, because they had an announcement trailer there. This was back when the Switch was announced in, 2016, 2017? And we didn't get any news on Shin Megami Tensei 5 whatsoever for a while. We got interviews here and there, but we didn't really get any like screenshots, no trailers, no press, nothing. And on the other hand, this was back during the era when the divide between Persona fans and Shin Megami Tensei fans and the elitism was a bit rockier and higher than it is now. So then back then, people were like, oh, Persona's getting so much. What? We're getting so much Persona 5 content, but we haven't got any Shin Megami Tensei games. And then dropped Tokyo Mirage Sessions, but it was a slightly enhanced re-release for the Switch. It's basically a port. The Switch release doesn't really add much besides a couple of quality of life features, a couple bits and pieces in battle, and I think like one extra side quest line.
Yeah.
And yeah, so...
Can I say one thing about it coming to Switch, though?
Because yeah.
Like, I think the fact that it came to Switch is huge because the Wii U, in my eyes, has always been like a good system that nobody bought. So if you got dropped and you were a Wii U exclusive, getting ported to the Switch is like the best possible thing yeah, that could happen.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. And I'm forever grateful that it did get ported because that means I got to play it and I had fun with it. So ultimately, we're in a weird place now because then the only SMT adjacent thing that we have is this weird spin-off that on one hand it's not what you wanted, but at the same time you've never really played it. Tokyo Mirage Sessions is I'm not sure to call it underrated. I wouldn't call it underrated, but it is a good game that you have not played, and in a way I would say it's kind of like comfort JRPG junk food. I remember somebody else doing that comparison, and I quite agree with it, and I quite like it. I'm literally sitting here eating junk food right now, and I'm having a great time.
It's true, and we have so many Atlas friends who are obsessed with everything Atlas until you bring up Tokyo Mirage Sessions, and they're like, nope, never played it. Nope, haven't. I'm like, I'm always like, I think you would like this game.
So this is going to be a bit of a slight jab at another SMT game, but people like SMT4 Apocalypse, and it's not for its story, it's for its gameplay. And I think if people gave that same treatment to Tokyo Mirage Sessions, I think they'd find a similar experience. And I know people like the former game that I mentioned, so I'm pretty sure they would like this one as well. So the thing about it is that now we have this weird game. Now we're in a weird spot. We have Tokyo Mirage Sessions out. And then eventually get SMT5 in 2021. We get SMT3 remastered shortly before that. And then we get the announcement that Persona 3, 4, and 5 are coming to all consoles and PC. SMT5 and SMT3 are coming to all consoles and PC. So now in 2025, we live in a time where the divide of SMT-only fans and like SMT fans and Persona-only fans is like much lesser. Like the barrier of entry of getting into either series is so much lower. It is so much more accessible.
Yeah.
And I am so grateful that Atlas actually took the steps to do it, because I was thinking this would probably not happen for ages ever because of the concept of console exclusivity. But lo and behold, here we are. So because of all that, now people just kind of neglect Tokyo Mirage Sessions and they kind of forget it exists, even though it did come on the Switch. I want to go back into what Tokyo Mirage Sessions is versus what it was meant to be. Tokyo Mirage Sessions is not the SMT Fire Emblem crossover that you were hoping for. However, on its own merits, it is very much a good game. It is very much a fun game. Slightly hot take, at least before SMT5 Vengeance came out, people were saying, oh, SMT5 is like the most beautiful like game that Atlas has put out in terms of art direction. And like, you know, eventually at the time I actually quite disagreed, because I thought the attacks of Tokyo Mirage Sessions, the visuals and all that, those had some pretty good production value, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah.
Like the cutscenes, they look good. The cutscenes look good. The attack animations look good. The character designs, the art direction, all looks very polished.
Yeah.
I think with SMT5, when it originally came out, It kind of struggled due to being limited as an Unreal Engine 4 game on the Nintendo Switch alone. But then, eventually SMT5 got its enhanced re-release with Vengeance. And Vengeance has some phenomenally directed cutscenes. So I think the competition now in terms of artistic direction is kind of close. And of course, you cannot forget Metaphor ReFantazio, which is probably the most different looking artistic game that Atlus has put out in since probably Nocturne or maybe Persona 5. But I still think Tokyo Mirage Sessions, very good looking game, very fun game, which has a lot of systems to engage with. It is surprisingly like it's got a fair bit of meat to chew with like how much customizability you have. It has the like I think one of the biggest reasons SMT and Persona, like the reason they're so fun is because of the amount of customizability you get with your character and like the systems in place for that customizability. And I think in Tokyo Mirage Sessions, I think you find a similar level of customizability there. And I think this game, and overall, I think this game would have been a lot better received if it was revealed to be a new IP a la Metaphor. Yes. I think it was not connected to either of the franchises it was crossing over, because as a crossover, it's a bit of a failure, because in terms of representation of or fan service of crossovers, the main representation for SMT is kind of non-existent. Like you have like Jack Frost's here and there. You have the similar SMT system of like you hit a weakness and then you exploit it for a bonus attack or like extra damage. And that's really the same elemental system, the same like gameplay rules. That's the extent of the SMT fan service. There's no characters, no necessarily similar plot beats, nothing like that. And in terms of Fire Emblem fan service, we have the main characters have references to Fire Emblem Awakening and Fire Emblem 1. So, yeah. And even the Awakening references are like fairly limited.
They're personas.
Yeah, and they're basically personas. And it's like basically, what if your persona was a Fire Emblem character? That's basically what it is.
Yes.
So the main character, he gets Crom from Fire Emblem Awakening. The main heroine gets Sida from Fire Emblem 1. The second heroine gets some Tharja from Fire Emblem Awakening. And I think almost everybody else, I think, is also from Fire Emblem 1. And then the final chapter of the game is a retelling of Fire Emblem 1. The final boss of the game is the final boss of Fire Emblem 1.
So, oh, I didn't even know.
I remember once watching a video by Scott the Woz, and he said like, and this is the era when Fire Emblem was also still getting crossovers early on in the Switch's life, and he said, why do all the Fire Emblem crossovers only focus on the most recent game and the first game? It's a slap in the face to longtime fans. And he had not played Tokyo Mirage Sessions, but Tokyo Mirage Sessions would definitely qualify.
Well, it's that I will say one thing. I will push back on one point that you made. So I love that you're connecting it with Shin Megami Tensei 5, which was the first Shin Megami Tensei I played, and I did not love it. Like, I didn't know what to expect, so expectations were a factor. But I like played it. I beat it, and I was like, oh, okay, I put it away. I didn't really understand the fascination. When Shin Megami Tensei actually clicked for me was when I was playing Tokyo Mirage Sessions, and I was doing one of those double battle dual battles, and it has like this awesome theme music and this like tension filled battle where like every move counts and like all the marbles are on the table. I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. I was like, I got Shin Megami Tensei in that moment where you kind of get caught up in that ultimate boss fight moment.
Yeah. I think SMT5 has that expectation with it. And I think Five kind of misses the mark per se, but it doesn't capitalize on some of its potential. I think it only really did that when we come to Vengeance. You should definitely give Vengeance a shot. I think original SMT5 is like a 6 out of 10, maybe a 7 if I'm being generous. But Vengeance is like in my top 10 Atlus games, weirdly enough.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Like there's so many new mechanics. Like you have like human party members are now allies that you can have in your party. You can have you have like these mini rails that help you fast travel in places. You have a whole new campaign which diverges from the original, where it's like, oh, you have new things. Oh, you might be fighting one of your allies. Oh, different characters die at different points, or the story beats play out differently. Betrayals happen differently. The heel face turns that the alignments have also happen differently. It's not totally different, but I think if you like SMT5 as, and you're like, it's a decent enough game. If you don't hate or if you don't dislike SMT5, I think that you will find that Vengeance will elevate the experience for you significantly.
My thing for Tokyo Mirage Sessions is I feel like when I try to explain it to people, one other thing is it's like, it's kind of like the missing link between Persona 4 and Persona 5 in that you can kind of see how it came between those two games because it's got a little more pizzazz with how everything is presented than 4 did, but it's not quite 5. And it's like, if you like those two games, you might like that one because it's got some things and you can sort of see the evolution of the games. And I think the one thing I will say about Tokyo Mirage Sessions that brings me down, and like for a whole different generation of fans, for people who weren't there at the time, I think the big barrier is that it doesn't have the localized voice acting. I think for some people, that was a barrier. For myself, that was a barrier at first until I played Persona 2, where it did not have localized, and I just got used to it. And eventually, I played several games now that do not have localized voice acting, and I'm fine with it. I like it. I've grown to appreciate it. Our time is moving on. I do want to touch on old Sona. And actually, like one other thing that was a benefit for me from Shin Megami Tensei 5 was that when I played old Sona, I was in a position to kind of appreciate all that it had in common with Shin Megami Tensei. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about Tokyo Mirage Sessions?
So I just wanted to say people should definitely give TMS a shot because I think what I ended up finding is a game which has very, very good dungeon design. Like, I think if people missed the dungeon design of... if people miss the dungeon design of like old SMT games, stuff like Nocturne, stuff like Persona 5, with like its puzzle solving, think TMS has very, very nice looking dungeons and has some pretty good puzzles. Like, it's some of the best puzzles like that the franchise has had, like SMT has had. Very good dungeons with very fun puzzles, very good combat that is like genuinely like junk food levels of addicting.
And, it is. It's a lot of fun.
The songs, like I said, like you said, the songs can be can range from overbearing to pretty fun. Like, I like the whole pop, the J-pop, like, idol stuff. I love that they have, like, actual, like, J-pop idol songs and not, like, one or two. Like, there's, like, a fair small assortment of them, like, from one or two from, like, each different character. And they all sound great. Like, sometimes when I said I replayed it, the game, I opened my clear save file and then I would just go to the trophy section and I would just rewatch like the music videos that they made for the songs. It's good. It's quite nice.
There's a sense of humor and it has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Throughout much of it. I will say the dungeon design, you're right. It is like Shin Megami Tensei. It's funny because some nights I want to like just be in the zone like Persona 3 and you're just running around trying to just survive and find the stairs. And then when you're doing something like Tokyo Mirage Sessions, you actually probably should use the map. You want to be aware of like the puzzle and you have to sort of use a different part of your brain to find your way through the maze.
I will say I I think there is a little bit of something lost because in the Wii U version, because it has a screen, the mini map and all the text conversations would happen only on the bottom screen. So
Okay.
that was kind of neat. Like you have like the all like the messaging UI and like phone stuff, you just do it on the bottom screen. The mini map is also on the bottom screen. I
Yeah.
think that was a pretty neat use of the Wii U gamepad, even if I wanted something more out of it.
Yeah. And you know, and another thing, that whole thing of like the missing link between Persona 4 and Persona 5, it has puzzles, which Persona 5 had puzzles. Like
Persona
that
5
was the
has
game.
puzzles. Persona 4 does not. Persona 3 does not.
Yeah, it's like you can sort of, there's some things where you can see that it added that became, I don't know, I did notice that. I was like, oh, this is a little bit like Persona 5, the way that it's got a set out dungeon with some puzzles in it. So I don't want to compare it too much, but I do want to talk about Old Sona because we do have, that was definitely one of the things, and I got to rant about it earlier today. I'm just gonna like put this out here and I'll wrap it up with the Persona 4 remake. When that got announced, my main thing with that really was like, you know, I'm happy for it and everything. I want Old Sona Trilogy like remade, and I want it remade the way, like, I want them to remake it like Shin Megami Tensei games now. And I think it would be incredible. I
Yeah,
think it
it
would be
would.
totally awesome. Oh, wait, so you're, I mean, it's like people are like, oh, they couldn't make that now. And I was like, no, they could, man. Old Sona is a lot like old Shin Megami Tensei games, and you just make it the way you make a Shin Megami Tensei game now. And I think people would love it. They'd be like, oh my God, it's like half of both. And it's like, yeah, it is. It's pretty cool, isn't it? So.
I think sometimes when people compare old Sona to new Sona, I think people kind of forget that this is still fairly on in the franchise's early life, like when it was still spinning off from Shin Megami Tensei, where
Yeah.
you can see, where you can very much see that it's taking its own steps to be distinct and stand out and different from main Shin Megami Tensei, but at the
Yes.
same time, you can very much see the DNA of that of its older brother or cousin series that it's like spinning off from. Like you can very much see, okay, the moon phase system, oh, the way demons work, the kind of storytelling that you have with those characters as compared to modern Persona, which is not to say one is better than the other. I mean, I have my preferences, but just to be just for the people listening, my favorite games are Persona 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
So I have my preferences for sure, but there's very much a difference. There's a difference in the style of storytelling. There's a difference in the style of music as well. Like you
Yeah.
don't have, for example, you don't have vocal battle themes. You have your battle themes are less poppy and like energetic and snazzy and like exciting. They're more deep and low and like what synth and they're like what synth and like rock with guitar and stuff like that. I think just like comparing the soundtracks of these games of like old of Shin Megami Tensei versus Persona 1 and 2 versus Persona 3, 4, and 5, I think just comparing the soundtracks will give you a pretty clear image of how each series is different.
I love the Persona 2 soundtrack. I have like a playlist of it. I don't think it's an end-to-end album I would enjoy listening to, but you can make a pretty incredible playlist out of Persona 2 music, which I have done and enjoy all the time. So that's one of the reasons I'd love to see it remade, that and for people to experience it, because I think Persona 2 might have the best, one of the best stories in the series. I think it's as good as any story in the series. I love the way it goes. It starts out with a cool premise and goes next level a couple of times from there. And I love games that do that. It kind of builds to something. So. And also, just the way that they are a trilogy. I think if they got remade, it would need to be as like a trilogy. Don't make them three separate games. Make them like one big game or whatever. But you kind of
Yeah,
do
I
need
would say
Persona
that
1.
would because they're a fair bit more connected than Persona 3, 4, and 5 are. Like you can
Definitely.
play Persona 3 alone, you can play Persona 4 alone, you can play Persona 5 alone. Like you can play either of those games first, and it's not like you're particularly missing anything, rather besides like, oh, that's a neat detail that I would have like gotten, like I would have spotted if I played the older game, for example. But like there's like a couple little Easter eggs at most in the modern games about like connecting the series. Whereas in Persona 2, Innocent Sin literally has like one of your main party members for like half of the game be a returning character from Persona 1. You have and then you have Eternal Punishment, where you for like 10 hours of the game you have a returning Persona 2 party member. Then if you pick the Nanjo route, then you have the main villain of Persona 1 returning as like a midsection boss fight. And then in the very end of the game, you have every single Persona 1 party member except for Mark, Ayase, and maybe the protagonist.
Yeah. They have the reunion. They have the reunion for the group.
Their little reunion, and like, it's implied the protagonist shows up at the end, just not on screen. But
I loved Persona 2. Persona 1, I sort of had to force myself through it, but I appreciated it. I grew to like it by the end. Persona 2, I like unequivocally recommend to people. The only thing is I was like, you really should play Persona 1 first, but I feel like Persona 1 is a little bit more a product of its time. One I did grow to like, but it was like an acquired taste, because I sort of and once I figured out the demon negotiation, because if you don't lean into the demon negotiation, that's like a really big part of one and two. But
yeah, definitely. But in two it's a bit more streamlined. It's a lot more streamlined, to be frank, in two. Persona 1 is very much an acquired taste, but it is. Yep. It is a game that is not like any other, both in terms of presentation, in terms of atmosphere, in terms of soundtrack itself. You know, the Persona 1 is a collaborative effort, right? So it had multiple composers on it. The most well-known composer for Persona 1 is Hidehiko Aoki, who he's only composed for 3 Megaten games, if I'm not mistaken. I might need to double check that, but as far as I know, it's only 3. Persona 1 is one of them. And then the other two are 2 games in a forgotten subseries from the Super Nintendo era, from like the 90s of SMT, called Majin Tensei. Those games have actually pretty good soundtracks as well, surprisingly. But the most unique songs from Persona 1 come from Hidehiko Aoki, and all the work that he did along with the rest of the composers. You have Toshiko Tasaki, who is the composer of Persona 2, the main composer of Persona 2. And of course, you have Meguro, who is known for composing the Aria of the Soul in Persona 1. It's good that such an interesting collaborative effort produced such a uniquely phenomenal sound profile for a game that I don't think I've heard in almost any other soundtrack, if I'm being honest. There's a couple other soundtracks that match it, but in terms of JRPGs, like, that is like one of the best, like, just in how unique it is, I think.
I need to revisit Persona 1 and listen more attentively, because I wasn't quite sold on it at the time. But with 2, I absolutely noticed.
I think it depends, because the case is because you probably played the PSP version.
But yeah, someone, I think a certain friend of ours convinced me that I need to play it with the original soundtrack, which is a whole other discussion that is like, that always comes. We talk about discussions that always come up, and I totally get it. And like, I'll throw this out here. I understand. School Days always cheers me up whenever I hear it. I understand how some people, it lands very differently for them. I do understand that. I totally understand that, because there's like a different context for it. Whereas me, it's just like a happy little song that's kind of fun, and I enjoyed it while I was playing Persona 1. But like, if you played that whole thing on the PSP version and heard like 20 hours of that song, it might be a little different.
Yeah, I think people kind of found it grating. People find it kind of a little bit grating to deal with the Persona 1 PSP soundtrack when you play with when you play the game with it. And I think, yeah, that is very much the case. As much as Meguro did come back to compose the PSP soundtrack, and like as good as some tracks are, I think School Days without the context of it playing over and over in the game is quite nice.
Yeah.
I can definitely see that. And also, they replaced the most unique tracks from Hidehiko Aoki with stuff that is a lot less memorable. Like, it sounds like Aoki's soundtrack is like stuff that is super like electric and unique and like ethereal in so many different ways. And then the songs that he made that got replaced by what Meguro made for the PSP version, Meguro's songs sound like elevator music, and not in the good way.
Not in a way. Like when you go into the pharmacy and it starts playing some, you know, not quite like that.
Yeah.
I mean, the pharmacy in Old Sona, where it's always playing you a different version of that same song.
Yeah, no, I mean, the pharmacy theme is actually kind of cool because if you translate the lyrics, it, like, tells you what items do. It's like, oh, the medicine, it, like, heals you, and this item cures your ailments and whatnot.
That's so awesome. I gotta ask one more thing because my time is almost up. Mm-hmm. You told me once, now, I don't want to misquote you, but you said something to the effect of there was something that Metaphor could learn from Tokyo Mirage Sessions, and I thought that was like one of the best hooks ever. I was like, okay, we absolutely have to do this now. Do you remember saying that and what the context is?
I remember saying that if it was an original IP, it could go it could stand on it like next to Metaphor as Atlas's like third IP pillar. And and I still stand by that. Metaphor is really, really good. Like, I think it's like a very, very solid, like great game. And frankly, I just think that it's a very good game, but it's very much like a new derivation and like step forward of the Persona hybrid social sim JRPG formula. And in many ways, the gameplay, the more interactive elements, like in terms of gameplay, they kind of get sanded down in Metaphor, like for the sake of player convenience. Like in Persona 3, 4, especially in Persona 3, Persona 3, 4, and 5, there's a struggle of like raising your social stats. And then after you raise your social stats, you know, you need to get all your social links done and whatnot and whatnot and whatnot. Whereas in Metaphor, and like it's a good like challenge, it's a big time challenge, whereas in Metaphor there isn't that challenge really. Like in my first run without any planning, I managed to max out my social stats, I managed to finish all the social like follower bonds, and then I had like a whole in-game month to spare, and I was wondering, wow, this was I missed the friction of like Persona 3 where like a relationship could break or reverse. And fun fact, that was actually supposed to be a mechanic in Persona 5 as well, but it was called the doubt mechanic, but they scrapped it. People found it in the game's files, but they scrapped it for some reason. You can look it up on YouTube. Like there's proper, like people have tried re-adding it back into the game with
I've seen that it was in Fez. I never experienced it, but Fez did have this thing where you couldn't start too many social links at once. And I have like this whole tangent I could go on about like how I love how there's a lot of things outside of your control in Fez. And that's one of the things that I really like about it. And the social links, if you neglect them, they get mad at you. That's like another, I love all of that stuff about it, but that's a discussion for another time. Your thoughts on Persona 4 Remake, are you excited?
Here's the thing about Persona 4. I've grown to not really like it that much. I will still recommend it, I think there's like some positive. I think there's still some positives to it, but as a whole package, I don't really like it. And usually you would think, oh, if he doesn't like it, then oh, a remake is an opportunity to fix the mistakes. And like, I get why somebody would think that, but no, not really. I think the fact that they're choosing to do Persona 4, like a remake of Persona 4, when we already have Golden on all platforms, including PC, I think choosing to remake Persona 4 for the sake of graphical fidelity is really kind of dumb. I really would rather just have a remake of like Persona 1 or Persona 2 or SMT 1 and SMT 2, because the Rido remaster is coming out, and the end game of Rido, you get a much better appreciation for it if you've played SMT 1 at the very least. I would much rather Atlas do an SMT 1 remake or something like that, and they just don't. So I'm ultimately kind of disheartened. And that's just how it is.
I'm with you on wishing the old was there. What's the best Shin Megami Tensei game? Because I've only played 5.
I mean, if you play, I think you'd still play Vengeance. But in terms of a whole package, I would say, in terms of gameplay, dungeon design, combat, character writing, music, and just all the storyline, everything, I would say the best overall package is Strange Journey for the Nintendo DS. So pencil that in, if you will. There is 2 versions. They made an enhanced like re-release version called Strange Journey Redux for the 3DS. Redux is incredibly controversial. It adds new content and it adds like new gameplay stuff that kind of goes against the gameplay philosophy of the original, debatably. And the new content is kind of I like some ideas of it, I don't like other ideas of it. Like so I would definitely recommend you play the original Strange Journey. Fair warning, it is very difficult. It is considered probably the most difficult mainline SMT game. I think if you have played SMT5, if you've played Persona, I don't think it should be that challenging. It will still be fairly challenging, but I don't think it will be nightmarish. But it is a very, very good story. It is probably it is a very unique setting. It doesn't take place in Tokyo or in Japan. It takes place in a black hole in Antarctica. And your cast is all adults. It's like trained soldiers from all around the world who are set on this mission to like close the black hole before it like engulfs Earth and whatnot. And like you have characters like from who are all adults, who are like all from different walks of life. You have they're much more mature mindsets, like play into their character journeys and how they descend into the madness of like that you would see in an SMT character go through. It is some of their finest work that Atlas has ever done, and I don't think it will probably be recaptured like again ever. And that's not a bad thing at all. That
they got to port it.
Absolutely great game.
I think I always love a good game.
It's an absolutely great game. Good luck with it. You're definitely gonna need it, especially like as you get into the back half of the game.
Kat, it's been amazing you having as my guest today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you to come and speak on here. I think this was very fun to do.
Thank you for joining the Amazing Gamers Podcast, a just for fun production that's recorded whenever Nathan has a little bit of free time and a friend to discuss a cool topic with. We hope you enjoyed the discussion and that you'll circle back with us next time. Until then, may all your gaming be amazing.